It's good to see everyone this morning. Certainly good to be here. Myself, as always. No place I'd rather be, really. Right here. Something I've been wanting to do with you since I started preaching here is to talk about Job. And I just really appreciate the message of Job, appreciate how extraordinarily applicable it is to every Christian. And it's something that we, I believe, should really give some strong consideration to each and every one of us into the book of Job. The book of Job isn't, as far as what I've seen anyway, it's not often preached, certainly not in its entirety, and I don't plan to preach on it in its entirety either, because, you know, there's over 40 chapters, and even if we cover a chapter, a lesson, or even two chapters a lesson, that's over 20 Sunday mornings, you know. And so that is quite a bit, and so there are ways to handle this in a more concise way, where we get a very strong grasp of the entire book without necessarily having to go verse by verse. And so that is my plan to do with you. And so we're going to try to grasp as many treasures as we can out of the book, as much application as we can out of the book. And so what I plan to do, what I'm hoping to do, is have more of an epic study on the book of Job, if you will, kind of a multi-platformed study, where we cover some of the big picture ideas on Sunday mornings. The next several Sunday mornings, cover the big pictures. And then in the bulletin, for example, we'll cover some more smaller picture ideas in the book of Job. And so that's kind of what I'm working on, and hopefully I'll be able to execute that exactly as I just said it. So be watchful in the bulletin in the coming weeks, as we'll have some smaller treasures in the book of Job to consider, things that I can't really put into the sermons. Let's go ahead and look. If you're probably already over there to Job, I'm not there yet, so just hang on a second. So Job chapter 1, here's my thought. You have this, this is a really big book, one of the biggest books in the Bible, biggest books in the Old Testament. You have this book, and it's all centered around this one man, and that makes him sound really special. And so my first thought in trying to understand this book that is centered around this one single man, my first thought is, we need to understand that man first. We need to understand why God would write this big old book about him. What is it about this man that God would want a record of him and a record of his situation to be preserved for the rest of mankind all the way up to our day? What is it about this man? And so that's what this first lesson is going to be about, kind of an introductory sort of lesson, but get a grasp of understanding why we know that Job existed. Because like any other person on earth, the vast majority, we don't know they ever existed. Those people of faith in the Old Testament, we only know really just a few names, those whom God has revealed to us in His Word. And He's chosen to reveal Job to us. And He's chosen to give us a great deal of information on this subject matter throughout this book. And so our first part of investigation really is to just come to terms with understanding who this man is and why God would write a book about him. In verse 1 of chapter 1, it says, "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. There were born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters. He possessed 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 female donkeys, and very many servants, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. His sons used to go and hold a feast in the house of each one on his day, and they would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And when the days of the feast had run their course, Job would send and consecrate them, and he would rise early in the morning, offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, 'It may be that my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts.' Thus Job did continually." So, this introductory portion here of Job kind of sets a little bit of a stage for us in understanding this is number one, a very wealthy man, but it seems to be attributed that the great amount of his wealth has to do with the kind of person he is, and that God has blessed him with this great excess and this great abundance because of the kind of person he is. Verse 1 told us flat out these 2 points. Number 1, he was a man in the land of Uz. And number 2, that he was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. And so this is the biography of this man. He lived in Uz and he was blameless. He gives us a little bit of an idea to help us understand how concerned Job was about the godliness, not only of himself, but the godliness of his family and of his children. It paints us a little illustration of something he would regularly do. He did not go and offer burnt offerings just for himself. He didn't come and worship God and bring sacrifices of atonement just with concern for himself, but the text stated that he did this regularly for all 10 of his children, bringing animals individually for each of his 10 children. And that shows the kind of spiritual concern that Job has, not just for himself, but for his loved ones as well. Now, in verse 6, we get a glimpse of something amazing that happened, something that you probably have a whole lot of questions about, something I have a lot of questions about, but I have probably no answers to give to you about the questions you have about this, except what we find in the text itself. In verse 6, it says that there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. The Lord said to Satan, "From where have you come?" Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth and from walking up and down on it." The Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and turns away from evil." And so God's question to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job?" That's basically the question I want to ask out of each of us. Have we considered God's servant Job? Because in the mind of God, Job is someone to be considered. Job is someone to be looked at. Satan has been walking to and fro upon the earth. God says, "Have you observed my servant? Have you observed Job?" He said, "There's none like him. No other person can compare to this man." So when we look at it from this aspect, and to me, it's like here we are living on this earth now, as Job was in his day, And what a thought, what a thing it would be for God to say, have you considered my servant? Fill in your own name. What an awesome thought for God to say, there is none like, fill in your own name. There is none in comparison to this servant of mine. Now, we're probably shaking our heads, you know, thinking that's not going to be said about me. But why couldn't it be? You know, what's the problem here? Is Job some sort of superhuman? You know, that we cannot reach heights like this where God would think so well, so fondly of us, that God would be so pleased with us that He would say, have you considered my servant? What would it take for God to view us in that light? That's really the question here. And we're going to be able to answer that. The book of Job is going to answer that for us within this very hour. We're going to see what it takes to impress God in this sort of way. For God to view us as beyond comparison to all other human beings. Job reached this point, and we're going to see that we can reach this point. We're going to see that it has nothing to do with status, that it has nothing to do with wealth. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that he possessed 7,000 sheep and 3,000 camels. Now, God has blessed him with all of those things, but we're going to find out about this man that there is something else. God's not impressed with his riches. He's impressed with his character. God described him first as a blameless and upright man, he said to Satan. And that's repeated back from verse 1 even as well. The same word usage there. Now, you might be reading from the King James, which says perfect, or the New King James, or the ESV that says blameless. But the definition of the term is one who is mature and upright, as one who is whole, complete, or undefiled. Job is, according to God, Job is mature. Job has reached a state of mental wholeness and mental completeness. This would demand that he is a temperate individual, that he's able to control himself, that he's able to be patient. People talk about the patience of Job, you know, that's a phrase that is used even in our culture, the patience of Job. Well, we're going to understand as we go through, you know, whether or not that is true, but the fact is God attributed to him a wholeness. Job has a wholeness about him. Job is not incomplete. And this is something for us to think about as Christians. As we give examination to our life, we will possibly, come up with the result that we are incomplete. We have some things that we're doing pretty good on, other things not so much. You know, we have some things that we know we are lacking. There are times of where we ebb and flow. We're not whole. We haven't reached that point. And what God desires out of us is to be whole. When we look through the New Testament text, this is what we see constantly. The letters to the churches and different individual Christians in the New Testament documents, we see this constant encouragement to become whole, to become complete, to leave that state of incompleteness, to leave that state where You know, we've got some things going for us and other things we're in desperate need of, and that we are working towards that state of maturity. So God's view of Job is that he had reached a wholeness about him. He was complete, and that's the first thing that he says to Satan. Job is complete. All right, he is able to control himself. He is able to endure. He's able to have patience. He's able to remain faithful to me. He is not one that is just going to slip up in sin. He is not one who's just going to find himself in sin one day. He is undefiled in this way. He is blameless in this way. The next thing that God says about Job is that he is upright. Now, one thing I like about the Hebrew language is it wasn't just a language, it was also a picture. More often than not, the Hebrews used pictographs. And I like pictures. I like looking at pictures and I like illustrations. And so the Hebrew language to me is very fascinating when you find some of their words that contained pictographs. Now, the word here that God is using, Job is upright, it was the pictograph of teeth, which symbolized to the Hebrews pressure. And then there was the picture of a head, which symbolized the top, the beginning. So the idea, the pictograph of this English word now, upright, was the idea of to press at the top, or to press at the head, or to press at the beginning. And what the word was originally used for was not for spiritual things, but for physical things. It had to do with the idea of taking shavings of wood, okay, shavings of bark, and sometimes they used animal tendons. But more often than not, they used pieces of trees. And they would start at the top. They would tie a knot with, you know, maybe two shavings, long shavings of the tree, or maybe several shavings of the tree. They would tie a knot at the top. And from the top all the way down, they would essentially create more and more knots. It's kind of the idea of braiding hair, basically. They would braid these tendons, or they would braid these pieces of the tree together, and they would create rope. And you know one sliver of a tree bark, you know, is not too strong by itself. I mean, it's kind of strong if you've ever taken a shaving off of you know, a branch. It is a little bit strong, but imagine tying two together, and or more than two together even. So this is how they, in those times, created a strong rope. And so this word upright is, he's not using it in its original physical way of the idea of creating this strong line. He's using it figuratively or spiritually, if you will, applying it to Job. Job is upright. Job is like this rope, you know, that has been made strong and straight, and it's able to carry things. It's able to carry burdens, and so really the definition, the more figurative definition of this word upright, it refers to a life that is lived in strength and straightness. Job walked a straight line. And he had the strength not to waver from that straight line. So this is how God is describing this man Job. The last things that he says here in verse 8 is that he fears God and shuns evil or turns away from evil. Now, let's look a little bit more here at some of these definitions. In Hebrew, the idea of this word fear is the idea of throwing a finger to show the direction for someone to walk. So if Job feared God, the idea behind the Hebrew word is that God pointed the finger to Job about where he is to walk. God showed him the direction to live his life. And if Job feared God, that means Job followed that direction. Job follows wherever God points. Now, we're going to see in this lesson exactly from Job's own mouth his concept of fear towards God, and that he did have an absolute dread of judgment, and he had a dread of punishment. He wanted to please God, and he knew that if he walked wherever God pointed, that would please God, that he would not have to be terrified of judgment or punishment. And the last thing that we have here is that he shunned or eschewed from evil. Again, the Hebrew pictograph for the word shunned or eschewed or turn is a bent thorn, referring to something that referring to the turn and the thorn, and then the picture of a head again. So it's the idea of turning the head away. And God says, when it comes to evil, Job turns his head away from it. Sounds kind of simple. The reality is, this is not what the majority of people do. When they see evil before them, they just keep looking at it. And maybe they won't do it, but they consider it. What God is pointing out about Job is that he does not consider doing evil. He does not consider sinning. That's not his thought whatsoever. Let's get in here and try to understand this man a little bit better. Let's go over to Job 29. Let's hear from the own man's mouth the kind of person that he is. Let's hear his own testimony. This is kind of Job's courtroom testimony, if you will, where he begs for his integrity and his innocence in this trouble that he has gotten into. He didn't get himself into it, but he's fallen into a great deal of trouble, which we'll have to talk about another time. But he is pleading his cause here for how he has lived his life. And so some of the things that he says in the next few chapters here, we'll look at some of these things. And a lot of this really speaks for itself, and it speaks volumes. So I don't know how much I'll really be able to, you know, help as far as explaining any of this, as I think we'll all get the point right away. Notice what he says in verse 7 of Job 29. When I went out to the gate of the city, when I prepared my seat in the square, the young men saw me and withdrew, and the aged rose and stood. The princes refrained from talking and laid their hand on their mouth. The voice of the nobles was hushed, and their tongue stuck to the roof of their mouth. When the ear heard, it called me blessed. And when the eye saw it, it approved. Because I delivered the poor who cried for help, and the fatherless who had none to help him. The blessing of him who was about to perish came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me My justice was like a robe and a turban. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was a father to the needy, and I searched out the cause of him whom I did not know. I broke the fangs of the unrighteous and made him drop his prey from his teeth. Consider some of those things for just a moment. First of all, Job talks about how highly he is honored by all people, young and old, no matter what the status, no matter if you're a great noble in the city, whatever it may be. He says, when I walked by, when I took my seat, the elders of the city, they rose, they stood up in respect of me. The nobles, they hushed when I was around or when I spoke. Why did everyone approve of Job so much? Why did everyone, young and old, rich and poor, revere him? He tells us in verse 12, because I delivered the poor who cried for help, the fatherless who had none to help him. He said, I was eyes to the blind, and I was feet to the lame. And he said, and I made the widow's heart sing with joy. What made Job who he was, as God himself said, there's none like him, is not the fact that he had his great abundance. It's not the fact that he had incredible status on earth, being the greatest man in the East at the time. But it was the fact that he looked on everyone with love and compassion. That he had time for everyone. That he didn't spend and expel his time on all of his own things, on all of his own goings-ons. His life was about other people. Anyone who needed help, Job was there. And this is how he became approved to all men. He was there for the widow. He was there for the fatherless. He was there for the poor when they cried out. On and on he talks about these things. He was also there for those he did not even know. Did you see him say that? In verse 16, he searched out the cause of him whom I did not know, he said. So there's someone with a cause, there's someone with trouble. Job stumbles upon them. He searched out their cause. He took the time to figure out what was going on. He took the time to figure out what they needed. And then another thing fascinating about Job that is said in verse 17 is that he was a man of absolute action. He says, I broke the fangs of the unrighteous in order to make them drop their prey. Isn't that incredible? The unrighteous, the vile, the evil, the wicked, they have someone in their prey, someone in their teeth. Job walks up, he snaps their teeth off. This is a man of most absolute godly compassion. This is a man who reminds me, probably more than anyone, who reminds me of Jesus, our Savior. And the way that Jesus looked at people, the way that Jesus searched out the cause of one on the road. The way that he had this compassion, this gentleness, and the way that he had this godly fury and zeal for those who were doing wickedly. The thing is, what we just read here in the text is all well within the abilities of everyone in this room. But earlier we were saying, no, God would never talk about me in the same way that he talked about Job. God would never say those kinds of things like, have you considered my servant? There's none like them. But when we read the account, we see that it is all within our capability to be exactly like this man. Let's look at a few more things. May not be able to see, really look at all of this, so we might run out of time. But in chapter 31, in verse 1, Job is continuing his appeal. And he says in verse 1 something that a lot of people on earth have a lot of problem with. He said, I've made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? That would be my portion. What would be my portion from God above and my heritage from the Almighty on high? What is my portion with God? What is my heritage? He asks. What is God going to give me as my heritage, as my inheritance, if I am out there lusting? You see, the world doesn't have any problem lusting. But what we see from Job is, I made a covenant, he said. I made a covenant with my own eyes. I'm not going to look at another woman. We know Job, we know he was married. He had a wife, 10 children. I've made a covenant with my eyes. I'm not going to gaze upon anyone else. He said, if I did, then what is my portion from God above? I think that's a good question. I think that's an excellent question. If we were going to act this way, if we were going to lust or if we were going to covet or what have you on earth, let's ask that question. What is the portion that God's going to give us from above? He goes on in verse 9 to describe it all the more. He said, if my heart has been enticed toward a woman, and I have lain in wait at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind for another and let others bow down on her, for that would be a heinous crime. That would be iniquity to be punished by the judges, for that would be a fire that consumes as far as Abaddon, and it would burn to the root all my increase. Job acknowledges that sin requires judgment. He says, if I were to act this way, then I don't have a portion with God. I have a portion with the judges. I have a portion to be judged. I have committed a crime against God, and it is deserving of a fire that consumes as far as destruction. He goes on to say in verse 16, if I have withheld anything that the poor desired, or have caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel alone and let the fatherless not eat of it. For from my youth the fatherless grew up with me as with a father, and from my mother's womb I guided the widow. Let me pause there, and I've got to say something first about what he said in verse 18. How could he be a father to the fatherless as a child? How could he be a guide to the widow since his mother's womb? Either, again, there's something supernatural about this man, which once again I'm saying there is nothing supernatural about him. But either that's the case, or he had an incredible set of faithful parents. I don't think you can... I think anyone could become this way, as I'm saying. But Job makes the point that this is who he's been since he was an adolescent. Once again, I think that has something to say about the power that parents have over the upbringing of their children. Job was set up for success, and I don't mean material success. In verse 19, he says, "If I have seen anyone perish for lack of clothing or the needy without covering, if his body has not blessed me, and if he was not warmed with the fleece of my sheep, if I have raised my hand against the fatherless because I saw my help in the gate, then let my shoulder blade fall from my shoulder. Let my arm be broken from its socket. For I was in terror of calamity from God, and I could not have faced His majesty." Job makes the point here, if I'm not doing what even my God, my Savior, would do, then pull my shoulder right out of its socket. Just break my arm. Because if I'm not using these arms for what is good and godly, then what point are these arms? What point are these hands of mine? Just break them off. He said, if I didn't help when I could help, if I didn't do what I could do, I'm in judgment. I'm in punishment. I'm in trouble. Notice his fear. Remember back in chapter 1, God said, "He fears me." Notice what he said there in verse 23. "I am in terror of calamity from God. I am terrified to face God's majesty." This is why he lives the life that he lives, because he fears God. He goes on to point out about his material possessions. In verse 24, he says, "If I have made gold my trust, or called fine gold my confidence, if I have rejoiced because my wealth was abundant, or because my hand had found much, if I had looked at the sun when it shone, or the moon moving in splendor, and my heart has been secretly enticed, and my mouth has kissed my hand, this also would be an iniquity to be punished by the judges, for I would not have been false, for I would have been false to God above." So we see here, and there's plenty more as you can look at these chapters, but Job is pointing out, if I could have helped and I didn't help, you know, if I could have done something, if I could have been a shoulder to cry on, if I could have just been there to talk to someone or been there to counsel someone, or, you know, if I had something material to give to them, which he certainly had, if I had not done it, or he said, if I started looking at everything that I have and started putting my trust in it, you know, started being proud of myself, started kissing my own hand, you know, honoring myself, thinking I've become something great. I've become something self-sufficient. He said that would be iniquity deserving of punishment. He said, I would have been false to God. I would have been false to God. God said, "Have you considered my servant Job? Well, we've spent a little bit of time here starting to consider God's servant Job. And I think that we probably all are just as impressed with him as God was. Once again, that leaves us to an application. Because God has set forth an example to us in Job. He showed us the kinds of things that he likes. He likes to see out of us. The kinds of things he likes to see out of our goals, out of our aims, out of our purposes in living this life. We want a portion with God. We want a heritage with God above. But this requires that we deny self, and we deny selfishness, and we live for him. And we act as God would act. We act as our Lord would act. And we act like his great servants, like Job had acted. If there's anyone here today who desires to respond to the invitation call of Jesus Christ, we see the ultimate compassion, the ultimate gentleness, the ultimate love in our Lord coming to the earth, suffering, dying on the cross for us. Have we responded to his graciousness? If that describes your need to come into the Lord for salvation this morning, then won't you please come and let us know while together we stand and sing.